This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast. We finally have the field on the road to the Final Four. The selection has been completed, and it really put a ribbon on a strange weekend. Obviously, Friday and then Saturday produced an incredible number of upsets, the most in 30 years, and set up some of the hardest bracketing and selection of teams that the committee said they've ever had. I can remember some years back in the old days of some severe teams being left out to where they screamed and yelled and hollered. I don't think you're going to hear that kind of stuff now, but you're going to get a reaction. Hey, the Big East was a good league. It was a very good league. It has the best team in the country in UConn. No one can dispute that. They are clearly the best team in the country. It has a two seed in Marquette that is a superb team when healthy and deserved to be a two seed, and it is because they've played down the stretch without Kolick. They have a three seed in Creighton, which is a very dangerous team. So they have a 1, 2, and 3, but that's it. They didn't get anybody else into the tournament. Now, I went to the Big East on Thursday and Friday. I felt Seton Hall was in the whole time. They were, but 5 upsets took care of that. I thought after the win against Seton Hall, I thought St. John's was in. They also played a 5-point game against UConn, one that they didn't have a chance to win, but still they played a game as close as they probably can against UConn. I thought they were in. They were not as close to in as everybody thought they were. A lot of people had them first team out after all the upsets. They weren't that close. Seton Hall was closer. A lot of people felt that the last 3 teams out were going to be St. John's, Seton Hall, and Virginia. Well, for Virginia, made it. Oklahoma didn't. And Indiana State didn't. Seton Hall didn't, becoming the first Big East team ever to be 5 games over 500 in the regular season and not make the NCAA tournament. They had a bigger gripe than St. John's because they actually beat better teams, including UConn. I understand a big man was hurt for that game, but still they beat him. A lot of people can't say that. The idea that the Big East could have had 6 if things had gone really well and we didn't have any upsets and Providence even snuck in. And I don't know if they would have been one of the 5 or not. They would have been right there at 5. St. John's would have been in. Seton Hall would have been in. Instead, they wind up with 3 teams. It's a brutal, brutal finish for the Big East, a heartbreaking finish for the Big East, a financially hurtful couple of days for the Big East. No question about it. I mean, they thought they'd get 5 teams. They were hoping they'd get 6 teams. They wound up with 3 teams. Are they better than 3 teams being in there? Yes. Now, if you're going to damn the system, it's nonsense. St. John's beat 1 team that is in the NCAA tournament. 1. Creighton. They didn't have a lot of quad one wins. They didn't. They had a long slump in January and February. They were no lock to be in the NCAA tournament. Do I think the league got treated badly? Yes. Do I think there was some outrageous injustice done? No. I don't. I think it was just an unfortunate situation. See, if you're Indiana State and you don't play anybody out of league and you have a great year in league and you get upset by Drake, you know what? You know there's a good chance you might not get in. You don't have the body of work to get in as an at-large. You really don't, despite having a wonderful season. And when you get five teams steal bids in the last 2 days, well, that's an outrageous number. When you realize that only two were stolen the last 2 years combined and five were taken away this year, it's going to cause some chaos. And the chaos landed directly at the doorstep of the Big East. Painful? Absolutely. How can the Big East respond? Well, I can tell you how they can respond. Get a good run at a Creighton. Get a really good run at a Marquette. And get another national championship out of the best team in college basketball, which is what UConn is. I've seen UConn in person a couple of times now. Okay? I saw them play St. John's twice. I saw them play in the quarterfinal game where they got off to a very slow start and then put together a just absolutely superb second half. There is absolutely, and this to me isn't even debatable, they are absolutely the best team in the country. I mean, when you look at them with the big man healthy, and he was 22 and 16 in the Marquette game, and the Marquette game was a joke early because nobody could put the ball in the basket. The ball just kept rolling off the rim. I mean, UConn must have missed 10 shots they should have made. But when you have the big man, Newton, Castle's going to be, whenever he decides he's had enough and he wants to go play in the NBA, Castle's going to be a top 10 pick. He has incredible skills. Spencer, terrific college player, plays with a burning fire, is a great open court shooter. Caravan is a versatile player who can kill you in a variety of ways. They get guys like Johnson come off the bench. All he is like a dunk machine on the lobs. They have five players that when they're on the floor together, they are lethal. There's nobody that can stop them. They do not have a weakness. They don't have a weakness on defense. They don't have a weakness on offense. They can play slow. They can play fast. They can shoot threes. They can attack the rim. They can protect the rim. They can rebound. They can offensive rebound. There's nothing they can't do. And it will take, listen, nobody's unbeatable in a one-and-done format. I did the tournament when Patrick Ewing went to the final game three times. He lost by a point to Jordan. He lost by 2 points to Villanova. He beat Olajuwon with some help, especially from some great defensive guards and a rugged Michael Graham, winning the championship in Seattle after putting forth the greatest defensive display I'd ever seen in college basketball against Kentucky in the semifinal game. Beat Olajuwon and Houston in the championship game. He was a player two away from winning three championships. So you can get there a couple of times. They're a different team than they were last year, but they are still the best team in college basketball. And in the tournament last year, they were so much better than everybody else, they never played a close game. It will take a lot to play a close game against this team because they just come at you in waves. It's like trying to defend them is like trying to hold the water back. You know, you stop it here, it comes out over here. You stop it over here, it comes out over here. That's how their offense is. You stop this, they do that. You stop this, they do that. They can come at you in waves, and they can score 10 or 15 points in the blink of an eye. I I have respect for Purdue this year. I have respect for what Houston does defensively. I'm not a big Arizona fan, despite the fact they have a lot of physical talent. I like Tennessee, but I scratch my head sometimes about the way they play offense. Look at the way they lost in the SEC this week. They were embarrassed. And Barnes, he's a gentleman. He's been around a long time. But I've never loved his teams in the NCAA tournament. I always think something's going to go wrong. Carolina is good, but not great. There are only a handful of teams. Handful. Led by UConn, which to me is a almost, I don't want to say a full level, but a half level above everybody else. I see vulnerabilities in Purdue. I see vulnerabilities in Houston. I see vulnerabilities in all the other big teams. I don't see vulnerabilities in UConn. Hurley's done a terrific job in developing a mentality there. They play hard all the time. They usually find a way to come in with a chip on their shoulder. Now they're going to open up in Brooklyn. Okay, they're going to waltz to the Sweet 16. The Sweet 16, you know what? If form holds, there's some good teams and some hot teams. I know UConn fans are yelling that, oh, they lowered the bracket on us. Hey, so what? It's still the best team. Yes, Iowa State punished Houston and won the championship. And Illinois, behind Shannon, who had 40 one day and 34 the next, won the Big Ten. And Auburn, with Florida having a horrific injury to their big man, won easy in the SEC. So you have the Big 12 champ. You have the Big Ten champ. You have the SEC champ. You got San Diego State, who was a runner-up last year. It's a really good bracket. I wouldn't say it isn't. And it's a hot bracket because these teams all played well this week. Is that meaningful? No, it's not. Villanova under Raleigh Massimino got embarrassed in the Big East tournament. Embarrassed. And then went on to pull one of the great upset runs in the history of college basketball. I've seen teams just destroy people in their conference tournament and go out on the first round. It happens. NC State just pulled off a remarkable run through the ACC. Historic run. You know what? Do not be surprised if they're out of gas. How you gain momentum in this tournament, you don't bring momentum into this tournament. You just don't. You bring talent into it. You bring coaching into it. You bring attitude into it, but you don't bring momentum into it. Momentum is developed in this tournament. There are a couple of teams that you know they're loaded, but they haven't played well. At the top of that list is our old buddy John Calipari and his Kentucky Wildcats. Hey, if this is the NBA draft, with the notable exception of UConn, Kentucky's going to have the most guys drafted. The team is loaded. Loaded with crazy good scorers. But they play nothing that even resembles defense. Can you win that way? We'll see. Think about it. Auburn won the SEC. They are a four. Kentucky had an up and down season. Lost twice to A&M. And finished, and he's got a three seed. Because the committee always has respect, and rightly so, for the Kentucky talent. Because you know what? As John will tell you, they're built for March. This team is built for March. It definitely is. It's built for bright lights and big games. They got incredible players offensively. But they don't guard anybody. Hard to know what you're going to get out of them. Really hard. They could, Kentucky could go to the Final Four and they could go out in the first round. I think Duke's very much like that. You just don't know what Duke's going to do now. Does it have talent? Yes. Now, Kansas is different. Okay? They're legitimately banged up. They put him in as a four. They show great respect for their obviously being there every year for a million years. But they got two key guys hurt, and we don't know what they're going to do. We also don't know what Marquette's going to do with Kolick, with the oblique. They're a different team with him. They're, you know, he's that good. I can't explain you. Listen, you know how every team has a matchup that is just not good for them? That's Houston and Iowa State. Iowa State is the second best defensive team in the country. Houston's the best defensive team in the country. Iowa State's the second best team in the country, but they match up great against Houston. They absolutely do. They give Houston fits, and they embarrassed Houston. That if Houston had not had such an outrageous body of work, they would have taken a one away from them. That's how bad, because when what I've learned through the years is when that committee is together, especially on Friday and Saturday, they pay a lot less attention on Sunday because they like to have the board scrubbed before they go to bed Saturday night. And historically, they usually do. And it's been that way forever. But Friday and Saturday, they're all in the room. They're watching every game. And they are influenced dramatically to the good and the bad by what happens in those games. And when somebody blows somebody out the way Iowa State blew somebody out, if Iowa State had had a strong non-conference schedule, they would have made them a one. That's how impressed they were by their win over Houston. And if they could have dropped Houston, they would have. They couldn't. Because Houston, Purdue, and UConn went into this weekend locked into the one seed. If Tennessee had won or not been embarrassed, they would have been the fourth one seed. They played so miserably they couldn't give it to them. So they gave it to NC, even though NC didn't even win their league. Remember, all the one seeds except UConn all lost this weekend. Then you have Arizona, which gets upset by Oregon. Oregon turns around, upsets Colorado, and knocks probably Seton Hall or one of those teams out of the field. But their center's healthy now, and Dana Altman's a good coach. Arizona's got a lot of physical ability. When they hit the high note, they can play with anybody in the country, but they don't bring their A game. As a matter of fact, sometimes they bring a D game. And they can lose to a really bad team. See, there's some teams that are seeded that you just know they're not going to lose to a bad team. They're not going to throw a complete stinker in there. There are others, like a Kentucky, like this year's version of Duke, like Arizona, which could throw a real stinker at you. I I think if a bracket's going to get exploded where it's going to be a wild bracket and none of the top teams are going to be there, that's going to be the West. Because NC, Arizona, Baylor, Alabama, I have issues with all of them. I don't have issues with Houston. I didn't have issues with Tennessee until that Mississippi State game, which I could not understand. Creighton is a very different team. They have a big man. They guard the three great. They don't guard anything else great. They shoot the three like crazy. They're vulnerable. They do some things really well. Shoot the three, defend the three. That's the way the game has to be played with them. It's all about the three line with them. But they have a lot of guys who can bomb down a lot of threes. Kansas, again, you just got to get a health report on their key people. Gonzaga is not Gonzaga of the last couple of years, but they're still good. St. Mary's is good. And you got some teams floating in the middle of that bracket that can really play. Illinois is good. They're a little odd, though, and they really do rely heavily on Shannon. I mean, Shannon, you know, they were down big on Saturday. They were down 16 to Nebraska, and they came back and blew them out of the building. They were down 10 in the second half to Wisconsin today and came back and beat them. Shannon had 40 on Saturday. He had 34 today. He's a big-time player. I have a lot of respect for Iowa State. I have a lot of respect for Illinois. I have a lot of respect for Auburn. The problem, they put him in with the team that is just about really hard to fathom that someone's going to be. I have a hard time seeing somebody beat UConn. I know that nobody's unbeatable. I've seen big time. Listen, I saw Michael Jordan's junior team lose. I've seen really, really top teams lose. One-and-done format lends itself to a team getting beat. This is not 4 out of 7. It's not 3 out of 5. It's one and done. So in one-game settings, teams can get beat. Even really good teams can get beat. But I'll tell you something. In terms of having everything you would want in a team and in a lineup and having everything pointing in the right direction, I think UConn is scary. Despite the bracket they got, which is tough. Listen, Houston, Marquette, if it's healthy, Kentucky, Duke, you throw in a good Wisconsin team, you throw in a good Texas Tech team. Florida's not a bad team, but they just lost their center, okay? NC State just won the ACC championship, and they're an 11 seed in that bracket. Even the 12 and 13 in that bracket in the South can play. You know, James Madison, Vermont, those teams are dangerous. Everybody. You know, everyone always looks for the 12-5 upset, and I'm telling you, everybody is going to pick McNeese. Everybody. Everybody went to pick McNeese a month ago. Now they got Gonzaga. That's not a great matchup for them. But everybody's going to pick McNeese. I must have seen, just flipping around, I must have seen 6 or 7 people already pick McNeese. Everybody always loves to pick the 12. You know that. It's been fashionable forever. Just like everybody's in love with Vermont, but you know one thing about Vermont in these games? They haven't won. Well coached, here every year, but they don't win. It's a wide open year, but the teams at the top were the three 1 seeds were easy. They were no-brainers. You could have picked them a month ago. You knew Houston, you knew UConn, you knew Purdue were going to be 1 seeds. I do not think Purdue is unbeatable. Is the big man a force this year? Yes. Is that team unbeatable? Absolutely not. Is Houston unbeatable? No, they're not good enough offensively to be unbeatable. Is UConn unbeatable? Possibly. It's going to take one hell of an effort. And I'll tell you, I love watching UConn play. They play the game right. In every way. Are they a little cocky? Yeah, they are. Well, they know they're good. They know they're good. You know, they get down 10 points early in the game, they don't even call a timeout. They're like, yeah, we're not worried. We're fine. Don't worry about it. We'll come back. Next thing you know, they're up 13-10. So, big picture, before we get to, which we will, the next couple of days, you know, we're going to do a thing for Bet Rivers, all these different things, you know, 12 seeds and upsets and this and that, and then we'll have picks every day at the tournament for you up every day, so keep looking for that. Go to the Bet Rivers app for it. They'll be up there. We'll have podcasts, so, and... You know, we'll put the Final Four up on Wednesday with upsets and everything else. I don't want to go to everything on Sunday night. It's no fun if you do everything on Sunday night. Sunday night's for the big picture. And the big picture is this. You got some real question marks around named teams. Kansas, how badly are they injured? Kentucky, what do you do with all this wonderful individual talent that doesn't play defense? Duke. Real Duke, fake Duke. And how hot is that ticket going to be in Brooklyn with UConn in Brooklyn and Duke in Brooklyn? Now, Duke, I don't know how many people from the metropolitan area alone, no less the rest of the country, have gotten off the Duke bandwagon since Coach K retired. I'd say some have. See, it used to be automatic that this will be a little bit of a test. You want a little bit of a test? Here it is. Is Duke on 7:30 on television? In the old days, Duke would automatically be a 7:30 game on that first night. Or whatever night, day they played, Thursday or Friday. They would never play during the day. Duke would always play in primetime. Does that still hold? Does Duke still have that appeal? Because it was Duke and everybody else. Just like Duke would always play in that first game on. If they were playing Thursday, Saturday, Duke would always play in the standalone game on Saturday. The early game Saturday was usually, even back to the days when I was in the studio, the early Saturday game was a standalone game in the configuration. And then they brought everybody and got them rolling at 2 o'clock, got everybody heated up between like 4 and 6:30, and away you went. A little later on Saturday, earlier on Sunday, because you had to protect 60 minutes. Nothing fooled with 60 minutes. And Duke, when you're making the times, and TV makes the times, they would always be early prime time on Thursday night or Friday night. Meaning the 7:30 slot right around there, they would be in that spot. You'd always want Duke in that spot. Is that still the same way? Has they lost a lot of their appeal? Are they no longer Duke? Or are they still Duke? UConn's a draw, but you're going to realize with UConn playing Stetson, you know, that game's going for 25 minutes, 30 minutes max. And you don't know if things get ugly, it could go for, you know, 15 minutes and it could be 40-10. You know, it usually isn't that way with the first game. The big team usually gets off to a little bit of a sluggish start. And everyone goes, oh, look, it's 18 to 16. And then the next thing you know, it's 42 to, you know, 24. But does Duke still have that appeal? You know, the names are still the names. Duke is always a magical name. Kentucky's always a magical name. But having UConn, which picked, you know, they get to pick. They wanted to go to Brooklyn. They'll have plenty of fans there, just like they did at the Garden. I mean, hey, I was at the games against St. John's, especially the Big East game. It was an enormously overwhelming UConn crowd. And that annoyed Rick to the umpteenth degree, you know. And then Danny trying to tweak him, because there's no love loss between the Hurleys and the Patino, to say the least. And after the game, after the victory yesterday, and I am very fond of Danny. He calls it Stores South just to tweak the Johnnies and Patino. But one thing I will be honest about, I have great respect for Coach Hurley, meaning the patriarch. He should not be allowed to sit there. First of all, it's like having another coach there. He shouldn't be allowed to sit there. He should be made to sit back four or five rows behind the UConn bench so that he doesn't, because he, first of all, he's working over the officials. Secondly, the bottom line is he could coach where he is. The guy's a legendary coach. I would think they wouldn't allow him to sit there. And I think Patino was ticked that he sat there. He even made note of it, mentioned of it a couple of times. But I got to be honest, I don't think that makes sense either. That seems to be a little bit of an unfair advantage. You know, if your dad was a Hall of Fame coach, you know, on the Super Bowl, he's not allowed to be wearing a headset next to you if you're coaching the game. Unless he has an official role and you've hired him with the team. So to me, he should be, you know, he might want to sit close, but I have no problem with that. If he wants to sit courtside, let him go sit across the court or sit underneath the basket. But he shouldn't be, like, right adjacent to the head coach. That seems like a little bit of an unfair thing. Just something to look into. And I don't think it makes any difference, okay? Because those players, they're so good, it's scary. They're so much better than anybody else in the Big East, and so much better than St. John's, not worth discussing. They're the best, okay? They deserve to win. They're the best. They win by a lot, and they deserve to win by a lot. They're that good. But I do see how that is a little bit of an unfair situation. I don't know how the officials feel about it, but I think the league should have a little bit of an opinion about that. But we'll see if that changes going forward. So we'll have something every day. We'll have all the stuff that, you know, I'll give you an example of what the kind of stuff we're talking about that we'll be producing for them. That they gave me a whole thing of stuff they want. I'm going to give you just an example, so that you can get a grip on it, okay? Biggest tournament surprises, two or three teams that you don't trust, seeded teams that you don't trust, most confident a 12 seed to win, how many 13 seeds or higher win a game, how many 12 seeds make the Sweet 16, you know, all stuff like that. You know, and then daily picks and everything else, okay? Final four picks, obviously, and everything from there, okay? I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that can win this thing, led by UConn. I think the number of teams this year that can actually win, I think it could get a myriad of upsets. But I don't think that there's that many teams that could actually win enough games to win this thing. That the warts are going to show up along the way. The most puzzling team in that regard to me, I go back and forth on Kentucky. If Kentucky gets red hot, if these guys start to buy in and they start to believe in themselves, can they get on that kind of roll? That one, I'm still working on. My gut is no, because they don't play enough defense. They're going to run into a team that's going to shoot them out of the building. Like, I don't think Duke can win the whole thing. I don't think they're good enough. I think Arizona's talented enough, but I would never pick Arizona to win the whole thing. I just don't trust them to be able to be good, you know, six games in a row. And then there's some teams that are top four, you know, one, two, three, four seeds that I just don't like at all, which we'll get to. And then there's one that I like. See, I liked Iowa State all along. And before they got catapulted forward with that massive, you know, beating they put on Houston. I mean, that was an historic beating if you didn't pay attention to it on Saturday. I mean, you want to talk about a game that got the committee's attention. That game got everybody's attention because they took a team that has been ultra consistent all year and beat them 69-41. Houston shot 26%. They shot 18% from the three-point line. Okay, they scored 41 points. They were the number one team in the country going into the week. UConn wasn't, Houston was. And Houston was a top-ranked team that scored the lowest points in a game in like 20-something years. I mean, 41 points. Now, they're a shaky offensive team. You know, and their star went 3-for-17 from the floor. And their big 1-2 punch basically went, you know, 6-for-30-something. So they just were throwing up brick after brick and turning the ball over and everything else. But that game really, really launched them and moved them up to where, you know, people are talking about them. Marquette, you got to wonder very much about, you got to love the way Marquette plays, but they need everybody healthy. And I don't know if he's going to be healthy or not. He's, you know, when he misses the whole Big East with an oblique, is Cole going to be healthy? If he's not, they're not the same team. So there's a lot of questions that have to be answered. But the biggest question that you're going to answer right off the top is, can anybody beat UConn? That's the first one you got to answer. Because it all starts there. You know, a couple of things on other stuff, and like I said, we'll have a wall-to-wall coverage of this stuff virtually every day here. So go to the BetRivers app or wherever you find the Mike Francesa podcast. I want to talk golf for a minute. I understand golf is hurting. I understand the fields are not as strong. And clearly, it's easier for a player that is as good as he is right now, okay, to dominate because, you know, guys aren't here. Scheffler, after Phil went away and all the mess, Scheffler's been my guy to root for. I got lucky with him early on, wagering on him, and I liked him. I saw rooted for him. He's an aggressive player. He's an exciting player. And he is an incredibly, incredibly gifted player. And now he is just tearing things up. To come from five strokes back, shoot a 64, and win the Players. He won the Players last year. First player in 50 years of the Player. Now, the Players, as you know, the Players is the Players' Championship. It is called the fifth major. It's not a major, but it's, other than a major, it is the most coveted championship in all of golf. He won it last year. He won it this year. This is the first 50th anniversary. No player, not Tiger, not Jack, not anybody had ever won back-to-back Players. He's now done that. He won last week at Bay Hill, and now he turns around and wins the Players the next week. This year, Scotty has played 27 rounds all under par. Now, last year, he went into a huge slump with his putter. He changed his putter. He changed his putting style. And he has his putting stroke back now. Tee to green, he's always been sensational. And he was usually a very steady putter, but he really went into a bitter slump last year, as the players can, putting. And then he had that incredible embarrassment with Koepka at the Ryder Cup, where they were run completely out of the country. And people said things like, hey, if you're the number one player in the world, you cannot lose like that. Well, we know that's nonsense because we watched Tiger and Phil lose terribly in the Ryder Cup. The only player right now in the world that can stand toe-to-toe with Scottie Scheffler is Jon Rahm. And he's not there. I don't want to take anything away from what Scheffler's accomplished, but all the players aren't in one place. And it's really killing golf. And as golf goes into its season now, as we are, as you know, it's a great time of year in sports. You have 17 days of the NCAA tournament, wall-to-wall action, wall-to-wall fun. It's a great sporting event. And if you don't like college baseball except for 3 weeks, so what? I don't care. It's still great. I'm not one of these people who says, oh, you got to watch college baseball all year if you're going to, or you can't enjoy the tournament. Nonsense. Enjoy the tournament. What do I care if you watch college baseball all year or you think about college baseball all year? Enjoy the tournament. It's a great American event. I don't care if you enjoy the Kentucky Derby one day. Enjoy it. I don't care if you enjoy, you know, college baseball for 2 weeks. Enjoy it. What do I care? But you go from college basketball, this great event, to opening day in baseball, and then to the Masters. And to me, there's two things that say spring. And neither of them are baseball, though baseball, of course, is the biggest one that says spring. But what says spring to me is Selection Sunday, and that's today. It's St. Patrick's Day. You're into the Ides of March. The winter's over. You might get a couple of cold days. You might even get a snow flurry. But the bottom line is the winter's over. And that's always a fun thing. It's always a great thing because expectations into the spring are wonderful. And then you know that baseball's right around the corner. And the Masters is right around the corner. But golf is hurting because they need to put all the great players in one place. It's really killing the sport. And I don't know how you placate the guys who didn't go, who feel cheated that they didn't get the money and now the other guys aren't going to pay a penalty. Well, you know what? Think of it in terms of the prodigal son, the parable of the prodigal son. You know what? Sometimes you just have to let them come back and not expect the one who stayed to gain something special for staying. And let the powers that be embrace the ones who left and let them come back. Because you need to get everybody. Golf misses a tournament like this where Scottie Scheffler's shooting the 64 on Saturday and there's no Jon Rahm in his way. And there's no Dustin Johnson in his way. And there's no Brooks Koepka in his way. They need to put golf back together. Because it lacks excitement. It lacks everything that it had because of the fact you just know that he's not beating the best field in the world. There's a lot of guys who aren't here. And it's killing golf. You know that? It's absolutely, absolutely killing golf. You know, I told you about this 3-year-old we had and how we have very high hopes for him, named Reynolds Channel, and that he was a real big colt who needed to grow into, you know, sometimes those ones that are big really need some time to grow into their body, and they have trouble too, and you just got to wait on them to let them kind of grow into their body, which is what, you know, some athletes have to do. So he hadn't raced in 9 months, and we're trying to bring him up on works and then run him in a derby prep and see if we can, you know, get him to the derby that way, which is everything has to be right. Every work has to be on time. And then he would have to win his maiden race. But does he have to win his maiden race? Yesterday he ran his maiden race in Florida. He was still, you know, he's gaining experience, which he's only going to gain from racing. It was his first race in 9.5 months. It was a good race. Fletcher had a really good horse. There was another horse in the race that beat both the heavily bet horses, which was our horse and Fletcher's horse. All three of them were on the wire, 11 lengths ahead of the rest of the field, and they all ran well. And our horse missed a length at the wire with the two other horses at a mile. And now I don't know if we'll be able to even sneak into one of those other derby preps and run again. We'll see how he comes out of the race. But it shows you how unique the timing has to be and how everything has to fit just precisely to get a horse to the derby on time, on schedule, and feeling the right way. It's such a delicate thing. And that's why getting there is so hard. So I don't know if that dream has died yet. We'll let you know in the weeks to come. The wood is April 6th. That's where the door closes. There's only a couple of preps left there, you know, that we could really shoot at. We'll see what happens. But the point is, it's now he's going to be somewhere along the road in the Triple Crown. He'll show up at the Preakness or more likely to Belmont and take on whoever the challenges are. But we'll see if the Derby dream still lives. We don't know. We'll let you know in the days to come. But he didn't win, but he ran well. So is the dream still alive? You hope it is, but we'll see what happens. Just wanted to keep you up to date. Because I would tell you if he won, I didn't want to tell you that, not bring him up after I brought him up last week, not bring him up when he didn't win. But it was like half a loaf. He ran well, but he didn't win. So he showed ability, but he didn't win. He didn't have to win, but it's up to us to see where we want to go with them going forward. So we'll see. We'll update you on that in the next couple of 10 days to 2 weeks. So again, tournament stuff, if you're looking for that, we'll be up every day with the podcast, and go to the Bet Rivers app for all of your contests and giveaways and updates and everything there as we get ready for what is one of the great American sporting events, the NCAA tournament, which will begin with the playing games Tuesday. And yes, there's a Patino in the tournament. No, it's not St. John's is Patino. It's New Mexico's Patino. So if you want to root for a Patino, you still got one. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.